Thank you. Thank you very much. It's going to be not too much of dynamical systems today, but maybe some of the dynamical systems will appear. So my plan is the following. I want to describe what's going on in the theory of randomly forced Bürger's equation in two settings. In one setting where we basically understand almost everything, although we cannot prove everything, but understand almost everything. And this setting where we consider Bürger's equation or Hamilton-Jacobi equation on a compact manifold. So it means that we are considering, say, periodic boundary conditions, for example. Not necessarily periodic, but that is the best, the most physical example. And another situation when we consider it in a whole line or in a whole space, and then situation is opposite. We know almost nothing, but there are interesting problems which are related to directed polymers, to KPZ scalings, and to all these kind of things. So at the beginning, I will speak mostly about things which we know, and then at the second half, I will speak about things where we're more. It's more open problem, so it's maybe more interesting. Okay, so let me introduce equations where I'm going to discuss the models. So we consider Bürger's equation with noise, with viscosity or without viscosity, driving by random force. So that's a basic equation, and x is not necessarily one-dimensional. It's maybe d-dimensional. And then the vector field itself is also a d-dimensional vector. It's a vector field in Rd. And omega here indicates that it is random. So strictly speaking, it means that it is a point of probability space, but just ignore it. I mean, this is a random driving force, which depends on time, of course. Now, the related, so as I said, viscosity can be positive or can be zero. And in this case, you should say something how you understand solution of this equation, because for case of positive viscosity, solutions are smooth. And in case of zero viscosity, solutions are not, there are no smooth solutions. There are jump discontinuities, which are called shock waves. And then you can only discuss the notion of weak solutions. There are many weak solutions for this equation, and then you have to figure out which weak solution you are talking about. And there is the physical weak solution, and I will discuss this the physical weak solution all the time. So in this case, you have to be a little bit more careful, but I will explain how to be more careful. Now, the related equation, okay. So let me again say, F is a force, and this is a potential force. So it is a minus gradient of the potential. We consider only potential force. And this is a driving potential, which is a scalar. Now, we consider only solutions which are gradients of some function phi, potential phi. So gradient like vector fields only we can see this solution of that equation. If we drop this condition, I will not discuss the case when we don't drop this condition. So the set of the class of solutions of gradient-like solutions go through the equation. If you start with initial data from this class, then solution will be in this class all the time. If you start with something else, well, that's another issue. In one dimension, there is not much difference whether it's gradient-like or not. In high dimension, it is a big difference, of course. Now, if you take this equation for the potential, then what you get is that equation, the potential, driving potential hung here. And this equation can be regarded as either, so when nu is equal to zero, this is Hamilton-Jacobi equation. Equation. And again, there are no smooth solutions, so there are discontinuous solutions, and again, everything what I was said here is valid there. For positive nu, this is parabolic regularization of Hamilton-Jacobi equation. Solutions are smooth, and everything is fine. Yes?
But there are multivariate solutions, which are in a sense smooth. They're not physical, perhaps, but they're smooth.
Okay. So for new equal to zero, solutions are continuous, but they're not smooth. So solutions to the equation are Lipschitz functions. I mean, we have jump discontinuities for u, which corresponds to Lipschitz functions here, where derivative from the right and from the left is different. But function solutions to the equation are continuous. They don't have jump discontinuities. But they're not smooth in the sense that derivative is not smooth function. And multivariate, yes, I mean, if you introduce periodic boundary conditions, there are multivariate solutions to the case. I will discuss it a little bit later. Okay. Now, this actually representative of a class of equations. I would talk only about Burgers and Hamilton-Jacobian in this form, but in fact, you can consider Hamiltonian here, different from what is written, not from gradient phi itself. You can introduce functions which depend on x, phi, and grad phi, and this will be a Hamiltonian equation, and that's why it is a Jacobian equation. There is a counterpart corresponding equation. So everything I say here will be valid for a wide class of equations, but it's enough for us to talk about that equation. Why I'm saying that? Because for Burgers' equation, this is kind of the only case of Hamilton-Jacobian equation where you can reduce it to linear equation. There is this mysterious change of variables, which is called, well, not mysterious, but very lucky change of variables, which is called Kolhoff transformation, which reduces this equation to linear heat-type equation, of Schrödinger equation. So if we use a new variable, which is psi is equal to e to the minus 1 over 2 nu phi, so if we introduce this psi instead of phi, then in terms of psi, we get equation psi t plus 1 over 2 nu f x t psi is equal to nu Laplacian psi. So we get heat equation, and this is a linear equation, Schrödinger-type equation with this potential, and then you can write Feynman-Katz formula for solution, and you try to we can try to analyze this thing. Now this trick is available only for the Burgers equation, only for this particular Hamiltonian. If you introduce another Hamiltonian, you will not be able to do this. However, analysis doesn't use it. Analysis I've discussed doesn't use mostly Hopf-Kohl transformation. They will be not very much interested in it because I'll be mostly interested in the regime when nu goes to zero, and then it's very difficult to control taking limit when nu goes to zero in Feynman-Katz formula for solution. It's very difficult. It's very difficult to control what's going on. So I'm not going to use much of the Hopf-Kohl transformation here. But it is available, and it's good to know. Okay? Now, so as I said, a compact situation corresponds to the case when potentials are, say, time x-periodic. So what were the models of random potential I will discuss. So this the very popular model is the following one. That this potential is sum of non-random potentials, smooth function on x, times white noises. And sum is can be finite sum. You can have just few potentials, say sine plus cosine, both multiplied by independent white noises. And compactness would mean that potentials phi ix are one periodic. So phi ix plus k is equal to phi ix when you add integer vector or integer number in dimension one. So that means compactness. And if function is not periodic, then it's non-compact situation, and I'm not discussing it at the moment. Okay? So this one very popular model. I'll mostly discuss this one. There is another model which you also can introduce is the following one. This is a kicking potential. It means that periodically, so system evolves without any force, kind of decay in turbulence, for unit time between 0 and 1. And then at time 1, when you get solution, you change it discontinuously. You add some potential to the solution. So you solve your equation, you get solution phi, and then you add another function to this phi, and then solve it starting from this initial condition again, and then add another function, so on. So you kick system only in integer moments of time, and the kicking potential you choose randomly for some reservoir of potential. So there are certain potentials available for you, and there is certain probability distribution, and you pick one randomly from this reservoir, from this thing. So this formally can be written as f omega xt is equal to sum, and here put delta function time minus integer time I from minus infinity to plus infinity, any integer moment of time, I add sum fi omega x, where this is independent sequence of independent identically distributed potential valued functions. So for every I choose independent potential from certain reservoir, from certain probability distribution. Okay? For example, you can think that, for example, you can put here fi omega x will be the following thing. It will be again sum of non-random potentials fj on x times some random variables psi j I, where those are random variables for different I, and sum is from j from 1 to n. That's example of this thing. So these potentials again non-random, but the coefficients in front of them are random, and you change them from I to I. Okay? Anyway, there is not much difference between this model and this model. All results are basically the same. Let's have it in mind. Okay. So as I said, we are mostly interested in stationary. So this is a random forcing, stationary random forcing, stationary in time. Statistically stationary. And we're interested in stationary regime for solution, what is called invariant measure for solution to this equation, right? So certain probability distribution solution which is preserved by dynamics. So another way what to understand it is the fact that we try to solve this equation for very long time. Right? We can start with anything we like, solve it for very long time, and what we get in the limit, this solution which we get after a long time will be in the limit stationary distributed. It will approach certain stationary behavior which we want to study. So morally we are looking at this equation not at times of the order of one, but we want to solve it for very long times. But time will go to infinity, right? And that's what is important. Now, I must say a few words about solutions. So in case of positive nu, solutions are smooth. And you can, for example, construct solution. One of the ways constructed just to construct it for this linear equation, and then to calculate phi, and then to calculate u, and that will be formula for solution. However, what would be the formula for solution? What is the recipe for constructing solution when nu is equal to zero? And for nu equal to zero, solution is given by variational principle. Variational principle due to Lux and Alenik mostly in end of 50s. And that is the recipe how to solve this equation. If you know how to solve this equation, you take gradient, you solve that equation. So recipe is the following. So that is solution for giving time interval. So that will be my time interval. And I would start from zero and solve it until time t. So I have initial potential, phi zero on x, which is phi x at time zero. It's my initial condition. It's initial value problem, Cauchy problem, and I need to construct potential phi x at time t. That's what I want to do. And solution is the following. So if you want to construct potential at point x, you have to consider all passes gamma. So pass gamma is just a curve on your RD or on your torus or whatever it is. Either RD or R1, depend on the setting, or in fact torus, if you have periodic boundary conditions. So there's a pass in periodic situation on a torus, and then for each pass gamma, you consider all possible passes, curves. So it's kind of particle moving on the torus, and for each pass you calculate the action of this pass. Lagrangian action of this path, a red formula in a moment, it will be a random variable, it will depend on the random potential, and you add to this the value of the starting potential, phi x, phi naught, at the beginning, at the starting point of this path. So value of potential at that point, you add to this, and then you take infinum over all passes under condition that they end up at point x. So you take all passes which end up at that point, or if you go from... No, it's exact statement, it's for finite t. It's how to solve Cauchy problem for this equation. It's a very powerful statement. The solution to the Cauchy problem for that equation in the limit when nu goes to zero, but the solution for nu equal to zero. That is the physical solution. That is a solution which you would recover if you take solution to the smooth equation and take for finite time interval. Take a limit when nu goes to zero. That's what we'll get. That is will be solution which you will get. And Lagrangian action, of course, is just...
Infinum was taken over what? Over all passes?
All passes which originated from this point. So consider everything here, and then there is one pass which gives infinum, and that is... So this infinum is achieved on certain pass, and that is the formula. Now, the action, of course, is a Lagrangian action, so integral from 0 to t, gamma dot square over 2, because we have this Lagrangian situation, for other equations would be Lagrangian of a system, plus the driving potential f omega gamma t t dt. So that is the variation principle. I want to say that variation principle is an extremely powerful thing. You see it in analysis. I will just have you, will give you a feeling that whenever you have variational principle, the analysis is very soft because all hard part is already taken care of by this variation. It's just a very powerful tool. I hope you will appreciate it very soon.
This called Maxwell rule?
No, it's not a Maxwell rule. It's not a Maxwell rule. Maxwell rule will appear later. It's not a Maxwell rule. Okay. Now, I want to say the thing which I don't think physicists appreciate very much. Even in mathematics, I think it was used only for the last 15 years or so. At least I know a reference of 92. The fact that even in case of positive viscosity, there is also variational principle. There is kind of counterpart of this variational principle which we know for zero viscosity for systems with positive viscosity. And let me just describe this variational principle, which it's always an important part of the structure of a problem to know some variational principle.
About this one, it's not moving from zero principle, it is you have to first solve the equation and then send nu to zero.
Yeah, I mean, that is what I would call solution for in this case. But as I said, there are many weak solutions. There are really non-smooth solutions in weak case. That one you would obtain if you take limit when nu goes to zero from a smooth solution. Okay? For which code?
The packet is back for the quarter.
No. That's exactly what I'm saying. It's a wrong idea to think about Hopf-Hopf. You can get it from Hopf-Hopf transformation. But it's a wrong idea because this principle is much more general. If you replace Hamiltonian here with some function depending on gradients in phi and x, you still have the very same theory. It's the very same variational principle, just Lagrangian here would change. So you would replace it by Lagrangian, which will function gamma dot and t. But variational principle will stay, and it will be no Hopf-Hopf transformation whatsoever. So it's better not to think of Hopf-Hopf. I mean, it's a bit misleading in a sense.
It's just a consequence of Hamiltonian Jacobian.
It's just consequence of the structure of this quasi-linear equation, of this Hamiltonian Jacobian equation, yes. It's consequence of Hamiltonian structure here somehow.
I mean, the linear term must be some kind of derivative of something,
yeah? It should be function here which depend on grad phi.
And only that.
Phi and grad phi. No, it can depend on phi and grad phi. And that one thing, and I like this Lagrangian to be convex in velocity. So grad phi is a velocity, so I want it to be convex function. But sometimes you can consider even non-convex Hamiltonian as well. So I mean, okay, so let me write down the variational principle for the, so that is for the equation with viscosity is equal to zero. What about viscosity positive? The very same equation, but with positive viscosity. Okay, now, first of all, let me write down here the following. That, of course, the minimizing curve would minimize Lagrangian action, right? So minimizing curve, since it's a minimizing Lagrangian action, should satisfy earlier Lagrange equation. Should be kind of satisfy Newton law. So necessarily, gamma dot is equal to v velocity, and v dot acceleration is equal to the force, which is minus gradient of f gamma t. So this is Euler Lagrange equation. So minimizing curve is a solution to Euler Lagrange equation. However, there are many solutions of Euler Lagrange equation. We know only position of this curve. In order to determine solution of this equation, so what we know? That gamma t is equal to x. If we know gamma dot at t, then this curve completely determined by the equation. I mean, this is just solution of the equation. But we don't know. So the task is just to determine such a velocity which would correspond to the optimizing path, to action optimizing path. Anyway, I'm saying it because what I'll do now to describe variational principle for the inviscid equation, I would replace this formula with another formula. I would say the following, that let gamma be solution to the some control problem. So, I mean, I want to be kind of, I want people to follow because it's easy, but it's slightly misleading. So I'm going to introduce another randomness in the problem. So in this problem, there is only randomness here, but it's not essential. You can fix omega. What I said is correct for fixed omega. So just a statement about Hamilton-Jacobi equation for particular driving potential. The fact that it's random is not essential. Now, I want to introduce another randomness. This randomness has no physical meaning and introduces only in order to write formula. So it's not internal randomness, which was here, it's external, which I introduced for the convenience of writing formula, right? So what will be the randomness? So instead of this thing, I would write the following. I would write that gamma is a solution of the following equation. So it's u dt minus square root of 2 nu dwt. So I would consider gamma would depend on u, as a solution of stochastic differential equation with a control, with a drift given by u. Take any control, any reasonable control u. Yes? Okay. Okay, very good. Okay. So I introduce, so I consider this stochastic differential equation. Gamma, if I fix u, then this u, gamma is determined. I mean, you can calculate it. It will be random because this is a white noise and this is random. It is not the same white noise before. It's just completely different white noise. Independent, has nothing to do with the previous white noise. So just introduce it for convenience, okay? Now, for this thing, I can calculate the Lagrangian action. So I would calculate the following. I would integrate. Velocity have to be replaced by u. So you take u square over 2 plus f omega gamma u t t dt. And that will be my action of the curve, right? Now, this is random because everything is random, depending on this randomness. I add, so this is the very same term I had before. I add to this term the value of my initial condition at the starting point. Okay? And now I take expectation. I take this thing and I take expectation with respect to this randomness.
U is given in this equation, it's a given function?
No, you can consider any u. At the moment, take any u. any
random.
It is it's stochastic differential equation, so it is a random thing. I mean, this is a stochastic optimal, it's stochastic not optimal, stochastic control. So you want to control your point stochastically. It's in this case it was solution of ordinary differential equation. Now it's a solution of stochastic differential equation. Okay? So you can use different control and then you get different trajectories. Okay. Now now let's take infinum over all stochastic controls. When I say all, it's an invisible class, what is called progressively measurable, I mean that all natural controls. Okay? And then what you get is a solution to your equation. Okay. So to solve this solution, your equation, you have to take to consider stochastic optimal control. And you see here that when nu goes to zero, this variational principle transforms to that variational principle. That's why solution goes into solution. And I said, Hopf code is not important here. You will just replace this thing by Lagrangian, the corresponding Lagrangian in more general situation. So that is a formula for solution of the.
Apart from the fact that I didn't see the proof yet, the why should physicists not like it?
No, not like don't know. It's very. I think it's very. Yeah, I mean, I would say appreciate. I mean, no, they don't know it. And mathematician did. The reference I know about it is 92.
It's very natural. We know that viscosity comes from molecular motion. That
yeah, it is a natural formula, but this is exact formula, and that's what is nice about it, right? Now let me now explain why variational principles are so powerful, and why. Kind of spent long time on explaining variational principle for this equation. So I want to explain the following fact, that in a very general situation, for very almost not assuming anything about driving potential, actually assuming nothing about them at all, you can prove the following very powerful statement. So this is a statement about this Hamilton-Jacobi equation with viscosity equal to zero at the moment, but similar statement correct for positive. So let's viscosity to be equal to zero. We consider Hamilton-Jacobi equation. And I want to prove the following, that with probability 1, the probability 1 will be always here, I mean, because we are having random potential. So it means that for almost all realizations of my driving potential, say of my white noises in this situation, they exist unique global solution to the Hamilton-Jacobi equation. So that's a statement, and I want to explain the statement. Now, first of all, what is said here?
Is here realization of F, not of W?
Well, F is given by this model.
Yeah.
So double white noises determine, realization of white noise determine the driving potential. You can say almost all realization of F, yes. Almost all omega, okay? So what I said here is the following. Of course, it's kind of strange in the first glance, because in PDE, in the theory of PDE, you can basically start with any function and then solve your equation, right? Going up in time. Now, I want to consider solutions which are extendable indefinitely down in time. So I want to consider solution for the equation which is valid for time between minus infinity and plus infinity. The fact that it's varying from minus infinity to plus infinity, what is most important, that it's from minus infinity until certain finite time. So solution which are extendable down in time. And then there is only one solution. So if you go up, you can start with anything and solve your equation up, no problem. But if you want, basically it says that if you start with something below in time and then solve your equation, what you will see at time zero will not depend on what you start with. It will be some concrete function. So basically, dynamics of this equation converges to particular function at time equals zero, and then at time equals one, and so on. So just, if you think about this evolutionary dynamics in infinite dimensional space of solutions, it has one attractor, one point to which it attracts. Now this is true for almost all realization. A very powerful statement, right? So let me explain this statement. But I first make two remarks, because literally it's not correct. Because first of all, solution to this equation is defined up to a constant, its potential. So of course, to any solution you can add constant, it will be still solution. Because this will not fill this constant, this will not fill. So up to a constant, my solution defined up to a constant, first remark. Second remark, there is first integral for this equation, which I didn't discuss before. This first integral is the average velocity. So there is an average velocity, which is integral of your velocity field, in respect of dx over your torus. That's why it's essential to have compact manifold. If you're in a whole RD, it's not clear what this integral means. But this thing doesn't depend on t.
But it's for finite nu. For zero nu, you have infinity of integrals.
Okay, so I'm discussing, there's this integral which I'm interested in, this particular integral which is called, which is average velocity, and this is true for zero viscosity and for positive viscosity, there is this integral, right? Now, the counterpart of this integral here, of course, is the following, that any function phi xt, well, this is kind of multivalued function, it has the following form. It has b times x, linear form, plus periodic function. Now this function is already periodic. So solution to Hamiltonian Jacob equation is not necessarily periodic. When b is equal to zero, it is periodic. However, when b is not equal to zero, when you differentiate, you get this b plus gradient of function whose integral is equal to zero. So this b kind of characterizes, if you fix b, you fix this first integral. So literally you have what is said here, there is one parameter family of solution which parameterized by parameter b. For if you fix B, there is one solution. If you fix another B, there is another solution. But only one solution for fixed B. That's what I said. Now, in things which I'm discussing, I'll not spend much time on it, it doesn't matter which B I'm fixing. That's because of randomness of my interaction. However, if my interaction will not be random in time, but say periodic in time, if I replace it with either periodic function in time, or autonomous case when it doesn't depend on time at all, it will be very important which B I'm considering. And then there will be a lot of arithmetical properties of B. Some B, rational Bs are not good, or some irrational Bs are good. I mean, everything will depend on arithmetical properties of this B. But in my case, they're not essential. You can consider any B, results will be the same. Well, you cannot get rid of B. Because solution I'm discussing will really depend on B. It will be just one parameter family of solutions. I mean, and for example, as I'm saying, that if potential does not depend on time or periodically depend on the properties, solution crucially depend on B. And this is what is called Aubrey-Mother theory. And you can say a lot about solution, but they will depend on arithmetic. Well, let's not go with this direction. So since B is not essential for me, let's think that B is equal to zero in this statement. So let's fix zero B and that for time being, okay? Now, I want to explain why variational principle is so powerful, okay? So why this statement, which is rather powerful, can be obtained immediately. Okay, so it basically depends on two facts. The first fact is the following, weak contraction.
Christian, the variational principle doesn't know about mu because it's been set to zero.
Doesn't know?
About mu, viscosity, because it's set to zero.
Yeah, it's set to zero.
But if I add not viscosity to zero, if I modify viscosity to zero, but keeping it dissipative,
but
Laplacian.
It's a very good question. Amazingly, there is no mathematical result on this of this type. So one would expect that if you replace, say, Laplacian with a Laplacian square or something like that, it will be the same thing. The cube, not, but square, if you have even power of Laplacian, it should be the same limit.
You're saying that as soon as it's dissipative term?
Yes. There is no mathematical result of that type.
Sure, because it won't be diffusion, that would be...
Okay.
Laplacian is actually...
Okay, so let me say, I'm not going into this discussion for a long time, but I would say that in principle, the limit you obtain depends on the regularization. And for example, if you replace it by the third derivative, rather than second, it will be another limit, and it was studied. It's another variation. It's just completely KDV setting, right? It's an it's completely different world. However, if you think,
but KDV is Hamiltonian. The term which destroys the Hamiltonian.
Okay. So if you, so what I'm saying is that if you put here integer power of Laplacian, so you keep integer power order of derivatives, then you would expect, and people do expect, that limit will be the same. However, it is, there's no mathematical result about it.
Are you talking about replacing or by adding an extra
term? That doesn't matter.
If you add a higher order term, then it should
be normal. Usually we replace it normally. So people want to like to another, so what is called to add hyperviscosity. And there is no mathematical result about it. But it should be, but there are some difficulties in proving it. There is a problem with maximum principle, and this nasty one. Okay, so what is a weak contraction? So that's the following very general statement. So suppose I'm considering Hamilton Jacobi equation, and I start with two different initial conditions. So I have initial condition phi 1 and phi 2 at time 0. And then I solve them, and I get two different solutions, phi 1 bar and phi 2 bar. Those are solutions after time t. Now, we're in a compact setting, so there is a normal, there is a difference between these two initial data, which is phi 1 minus phi 2. And I put norm here. This is uniform norm. So this is supremum, or say maximum, over all x, phi 1 x minus phi 2 x. And x here belongs to a torus. Right? And then you might be interested in what will be the difference between the solutions here. So you'll be interested in what is a norm of phi 1 bar minus phi 2 bar. And the statement is that this difference is always less or equal than that difference. So it cannot increase, it can only decrease. And weak contraction means that there is no coefficient less than 1 here. If it will be coefficient less than 1, then it will be just marvelous. But that's not true. But this statement is true, and it's obvious. And let me explain why it's obvious. And this is rather powerful already. This weak contraction gives you a lot of information already. So why it is true?
When nu is not equal to 0, coefficient less than 1.
Say it again.
When nu is not equal to 0, when finite nu, the coefficient is less than 1, you can put here.
You can have, we still use weak contraction, but maybe you can improve on it, yes. Okay, so that's a statement. So we take point x, and then we consider, so what is the solution at this point? It's a minimizer. But there are two minimizers. One minimizer corresponds to one initial condition, another minimizer corresponds to another initial condition, right? So there are two curves. So one corresponds to initial condition 1, and this ends up at point x1. And another corresponds to initial condition phi 2, and this is ends at point x2. Right? Now, if I want to estimate phi 1 bar at point x1 minus phi 1 bar at point x2, so the difference at, sorry, the point x, the difference of these two things, phi 1, phi 2, bar, bar, at point x and x, so I want to consider this difference. I would say that this is less or equal than what? Let me see. So I start with phi 1. Phi 1 is given by this curve. This is minimizer. So if I replace this green curve by red curve, I only increase my action. So it is less or equal than the action calculated by for the red curve, right? And so if I calculate action calculated by red curve, it will be the following. It will be A, the action of red curve, Lagrangian action of red curve, plus phi 1 at point x2. So that will be the action if I would go not along the green line, but around the red line, right? And I have to sub. So that is, this term is greater or equal than that term. And this term is equal, exactly equal to A plus phi 2 x 2. So A cancels, and this is less or equal than difference between phi 1 and phi 2 at given point, so it's less or equal than phi 1 minus phi 2. But I can do exactly the same comparing phi 2 at point x minus phi 1 at point x. It will be exactly the same thing, and again it will give me this less or equal than phi 1 minus phi 2. Which means that absolute value of this is less or equal than this one. Which is exactly, and that is true for any x. So that implies what I wanted. You see, I did nothing, I mean just cheap. And I get rather strong result. Okay?
You proved that the state and the state is unique.
No, I didn't prove anything yet. I just proved weak contraction. Okay?
Well, again, I would go right down a Fock-Planck type equation.
It's not true that stationary state is unique. You have to use some property of your forcing. For example, if your forcing is non-random, I would not say anything. Okay. Now, the next step is to show. So, if I want to prove that really that the stationary regime is unique, as you're claiming, that, I want to say that in fact they're getting closer and closer. So I need the next ingredient. And this ingredient already requires moving for long time. So here it was any interval of time. I didn't use interval of time here. So now I want to consider the following. So I'm solving my problem, say, from until time zero, and I start at certain time equal to minus t, where t will go to minus infinity. So a very long interval of time. Okay? And since it's very long interval of time, basically my forces do all kind of things in between. So any behavior you can think of, you will meet it somewhere in between. Because it happens with positive probability, so if you wait long enough, you'll encounter it. So what I'm saying is that for arbitrary n, large n, that for arbitrary large n and small epsilon, you will find an interval of time of length n such that your forcing potential here is smaller than epsilon. That this is smaller than epsilon. So it just means that you found such configuration of your white noises which are not fluctuating much during time n. So suppose I have found such long interval of time with small fluctuation of my potential. I claim that if I go through this, then this norm difference of the solution, I claim the following, that whenever I solve my equation and pass through this interval, which I called epsilon narrow place, my solution will be very close to constant. So then let me explain it. Why solution after such interval is very close to constant. So now I have to compare the values of my solution starting
as a function of what?
Of x. So my solution after that as a function of x in different points will almost be the same. So phi at this point and that point will be almost the same.
Big shock in everything?
No. Just look. So you take one minimizer for one point, another minimizer for another point. But look, this is a finite distance because the whole distances in our problem are finite. It's beyond the torus. So I'm claiming the following, that if the solution here is much smaller than the solution there, it means that this action is much smaller than that action. But then I can do the following. And instead of going along this curve, I can switch to that one and then continue like this. I can accumulate something, some price for switching. But let's estimate this price. The velocity will be, the extra velocity you get to go from this point to this will be less, will be of the order of 1 divided by the time interval, by n. So the integral of the delta v square on this time interval will be of the order of 1 over n square time n, so 1 over n. So it's very small when n goes to infinity. And also, you are going using different f, but f is small everywhere. So integral of f will also be small, less than epsilon. So the integral of f for one curve minus integral of f for another curve, gamma 1 bar, will be less than epsilon times n. And it is small when epsilon is much smaller than n. So if you choose epsilon and n properly, the difference in action, the price you pay for switching, will be arbitrarily small. But that exactly means the difference between values here and here cannot be large. It cannot be bigger than price you pay for switching. And that means for all points you have constant potential. And if it's true, then it means that doesn't matter what you start from, what you get here will be very close because it's two constants. Maybe one constant, another. You remember we discussed our solution only up to a constant. And if two functions are close to constants, then they're close to each other. So I mean that when we pass through such place, the distance, the norm of the difference between two solutions will be arbitrarily small. But then it cannot increase and can only stay the same. That's why you have unique solution. Okay? So that's the whole proof. The theorem, basically I have proved the whole theorem. Then just two facts, that when you have epsilon narrow place, function is close to constant, and weak contraction. Okay? Now, I'm not so happy with such kind of theorems because it's nice, it's soft, but it is uniqueness existence theorem. And we want to get some physical information, how solutions look like, I mean, how this station, what are the properties of stationary solution. But that's how you get this unique solution. And that is existence of invariant measure, that's everything is here. That's in these two facts, okay? And actually, you can do the very same thing for positive viscosity. And you get stationary invariant measure and unique invariant measure for a unique solution for systems with positive viscosity. And the very same argument shows that when viscosity goes to zero, one invariant measure converges to another invariant measure. There is one settled point, I'm not going to discuss it, but it's not essential now. It's for fixed B. B is fixed. It's just always considered is one parameter family of different problems. Different B is different problems. Okay? It's tilt. Yeah, it's tilt. Say it again. Breaking which invariant? I don't know. I think not. But why?
Well, it breaks. I mean, it fits. I mean, it's periodic. I mean, you.
Oh, so I fix. Yeah, in periodic situation, yes. Okay. Now, let me get something out of it more important than this was just an exercise to show power of variational principles. And when you have variational principles, you are in a very good shape. Now, how to get more information? How to say something more about what we're discussing? And in fact, let's look at this unique solution we constructed. And so what we have proved is that there is a special solution to our equation, and we approach this solution whenever we solve our equation for a long time. So what we constructed, a special solution phi omega xt, it's a solution to our equation, which is valid for all time. And for example, if I consider time zero, this solution, what it means? For every omega, you have special function, some function. So it gives us probability distribution in the space of functions. So that is distribution of this function is a stationary measure for our equation, right? And now this function is Lipschitz. It's a Lipschitz function, but not necessarily differentiable. And moreover, you can prove the following fact. It's kind of simple, believe me. It needs something, but it's a simple statement. That whenever, so Let me introduce the notion of two notions. One-sided minimizer. Minimizer. First, and then global minimizer. So, one-sided minimizer is the following thing. I define it at time naught, time equal to zero, at point x. So it's a curve, gamma, originated from this point, such that for any compact perturbation of this curve, if I replace one piece of this curve with something else, the action will only increase. So the, if we consider such curve, then the action white is smaller or equal than the action green. If you, such curve exists, it's called one-sided minimizer. One-sided because it has one point here. Okay. And global minimizer, since I want to give definition at the very beginning, is just a curve which goes from minus infinity to plus infinity in time, and with the very same property. It's not attached to any point, it's just curve from minus infinity to plus infinity with the same property, that for any green thing, the action is less or equal. Of course, it's important that you perturb only on a compact interval, otherwise it's very difficult to say what is the difference in action. Okay? And so the statement, I want to say the following, that that if we consider this special solution, then first of all, the gradient of this special solution is of course solution of our Burgers equation. It's unique solution with solution to our Burgers equation. But what I'm claiming is the following, that u omega x naught is the velocity of one-sided minimizer at x naught. So if I take point x at time naught and consider there exists one-sided minimizer and velocity of this minimizer, so it is that this is equal to gamma dot at, so velocity of minimizer corresponding to that point at time zero. So there are two ways to get solution of Burgers equation. You either take velocity of minimizer, which comes to this point, or you differentiate with respect of x the potential phi. I mean, there are two formulas. It's one thing which I want to say. And second thing is that it can be that there are two minimizers coming to the same point. And then there are two velocities. And of course, two velocities are different because both curves are solutions to Euler-Lagrange equation. They cannot have the same velocity. So then you have jump discontinuity at that point. There are two velocities, so there's a jump discontinuity. So this is a point of shock. If there are more than one, one minimizer, then we have a shock, shock wave. They will be joining at minus infinity. Yeah, I'm not claiming at the beginning, but they will be joining at minus infinity. And the third thing is that on the level of function phi, it's very easy to distinguish points of shock and not shock. Just points of differentiability, not differentiability. So if phi is differentiable, at x, then one minimizer, unique minimizer. Unique minimizer at that point, at x. If it is not differentiable, then shock. So more than one. So it's just one-to-one correspondence. Okay? And so the picture here is the following, that say we have solution at every point If we fix time, any time, for example, time equal to zero, but any time, from every point, there is a minimizer going down. And for majority of points, it's unique minimizer, but some points have two minimizers. And those are points of shocks. And these minimizers never intersect. It's easy to show that they cannot intersect. So it's just field of lines going down, which are not intersecting. Okay? Now, what's going on if we increase our time? If we consider a picture which originated from some time t greater than zero. It also has a field of minimizers going down, right? But they will reach not all the points here. Not all points here will be reachable. They will never pass through the point which was point of shock. In fact, they will not even pass through certain intervals surrounding this point. So kind of shock generates some interval of forbidden points. And you can think that there are particles going up, and these particles can either survive until time t, or can be swallowed by a shock, absorbed by shock. And the particle, number of particles, some particles, if they're absorbed by shock, they keep them, I mean, they kind of die, you don't see them anymore. So particles, some particles were absorbed by this time, and then more particles were absorbed by this time, so monotone decreasing set. So it looked the following way, that it would be shock here, and there are two minimizers corresponding to this shock, and there will be another shock here, two minimizers corresponding to this shock, and the whole interval is forbidden. All points here and here are not reachable by minimizers from here. But other points are reachable. And this interval gets bigger and bigger. And what can happen if you consider a larger time, maybe these two shocks merge. So it's one shock which covers both of them. At that point, these two things merge. And normally, at moment of merge, there are three minimizers originated from point of shock. It means that two intervals, this what was green interval, it's now red interval, and another red interval, and then merge together. They were separated and they merge together. So there is one red interval of forbidden points. And that's what's going on with shocks. So they appear, they merge with each other, they evolve in time. And what I want to explain now is the following, that actually because of the randomness of dynamic, what will happen that almost all points, if we go up and up, will be absorbed by shock. But there's one point which will never be absorbed by shock, at only one point. So the statement is there exists unique point X star at time, which will not be absorbed. By shocks. All other will be absorbed, but only one point will not be absorbed. And this is what is point of global minimizer.
We are talking about deterministic solution with a given particular force.
Yeah, the force is, we fix realization of force. Realization. And for almost all forces, there exists one point which will depend on this realization of forces.
Force?
No, forces. For this statement, you need some conditions. For this statement, you need some conditions. Yeah, I can stop here, you know, and make a break. Maybe let me say two words and then I stop here. So it is a rather easy statement that the point which will not be absorbed by shocks and global minimizer is exactly the same thing. So whenever we have this say global minimizer, this point will never be absorbed by shock because it's a minimizer. I mean, it keeps being minimizer for all times. So if you have several global minimizers, there are several points which are not absorbed by shocks. So it's one-to-one, points which are not absorbed and global minimizers. And to explain why there is a unique point, it's enough to explain why there is a unique global minimizer. And I'll do it after the break. Okay.
Right.
So, let me explain how to get this unique point, and then I'll say. So, by the way, I forgot maybe to emphasize that what is the meaning? What is the physical?
Well, just look. So, this thing, what is this unique point? So, that means if you give me some force, not zero,
yeah,
then most of the main solutions, most of the solutions will develop shocks, but there will be one which will
be. No. So, I mean, the next is the following. Your initial condition are some points with velocities. These points start to move. Kind of, you can think it's fluid particles. And some of them are absorbed by shocks, some of them survive and go farther. And what I'm claiming, there's just one point which will never be absorbed by shocks.
Although shock will exist,
but it will not be the absorbed point.
And what's the condition for
force? I'll formulate.
Zero.
I think zero is bad, but otherwise I think almost anything is okay. I will formulate concrete results.
Why is zero is bad?
Huh?
What happens if it's zero?
Well, first of all, okay. First of all, let me say. Of course, you don't have you don't want to have potential F to have symmetries. Suppose you have plus minus symmetry, then you cannot have one global minimizer because with every point there is minus point, right? So you don't want, if you have symmetry, then you have to replace this by finite number or something. So you want to avoid symmetries. Zero is the most symmetric thing you can ever imagine. Now, when potential is zero, everything I'm saying is incorrect. I mean, not everything, but it's essentially different. We'll see that in what I'm discussing, hyperbolicity play an important role. And when potential is zero, there is no hyperbolicity, and situation is elliptic. So it is just the worst example you can imagine. But otherwise, I think the situation is the following. If your potential have no symmetry, then it will be any global minimizer. If there is symmetry, the number of minimizers is governed by the symmetry you have. So it's plus minus symmetry, you have two global minimizers. But
What is the relation to the one-sided minimizer on the Lagrangian trajectory?
Yeah, all trajectories here we consider are Lagrangian trajectories.
What happens to the trajectory when two of them meet, when there is a shock?
Yeah, trajectory of shock is not Lagrangian trajectory. So, I should say that this is Lagrangian trajectory, this is Lagrangian trajectory. You can continue the Lagrangian trajectory, and this and that. However, they are not minimizers. They are not minimizer for this point and not minimizer for that. They are not minimizers anymore.
Usually, the Nürburgring effect, so that when the particles are met, they follow them. They skip.
Yes. And they form shock. They're swallowed by shock at that point.
They follow the shock.
Exactly. So it will be a curve of a shock going up. But this curve of a shock is not Lagrangian trajectory. So, let me just say, what is the meaning of this function phi omega x naught which we constructed, unique function? The meaning of it is the following. This is an action of the minimizer at point x. So, one-sided minimizer going to point x has action equal to this number. And you can understand it almost literally. It's not exactly literal because action is infinite. But if you take two different points, the difference in action is already a real number, and this is the difference between this. So you should think about the thing as an action of one-sided minimizer and point x. This function gives you the action of this curve. Now, so what we constructed, this function phi omega x naught, and I would add path to it, because it depends on the path of our process. However, exactly the same way we did it before, we can construct another function which consider curves going up in time and take their action. Exactly the same way with the construction. So we can construct another function, phi future x naught. And this function would just tell us what is the optimal path going up from point x. What is the action of optimal path? And now let me take some of these two functions. So this thing would tell you what is the best you can do when you go both up and down. And now I take a minimum of this thing over x. And then point x, which gives this minimum, is a point of global minimizer. And this is very easy to show, that global minimizer if and only if it minimizes this function. Now what we're talking about is a continuous function. This is continuous, moreover, Lipschitz function on a torus. And this is continuous Lipschitz function on a torus. So the sum of this is continuous Lipschitz function on torus. Of course it has minimum. But also remember this is a random function. So can you imagine that random function has two global minima? It's very degenerate situation, and in principle it should happen with probability zero. So with probability one, it would be one point where global minima achieve, unless you have some symmetry which forces you to have several of them. And that's why this point is unique. However, I was emphasizing when we talked other day, it is rather difficult to prove because you don't have control. They're random, but you don't have control, enough control on the probability distribution for the thing. So you need to have some conditions to prove it. And so we proved it in the following situation. So the statement, exact statement is the following. If you consider white noise model, and then you consider the following thing. So remember, this white noise model is defined by n non-random potentials, like sine, cosine, whatever. So these n functions, they're non-random functions, they define a mapping of our torus into Rn, just the values of those functions. So if this mapping is embedding, it means that different points come to different point. No two points come to the same one. If it's embedding, then it implies that there exists unique minimizer, global minimizer. So that's a theorem. Now, for example, if you're in one-dimensional situation and you have sine x and cosine x, that's embedding. And generally, if you take in d-dimensional situation 2D trigonometric polynomials, that will be embedding. So normally 2D potentials is enough to have embedding and then you have unique point. But you have to have enough potential. And for example, if you have here cosine x and cosine 2x, I don't want to have it because it's not embedding, because it has symmetry. It has plus minus symmetry. Right? So one will have to be to put some conditions up here. Okay.
If I study not Lagrangian trajectories, but just pi u, can I visualize this interesting point?
No.
In the solution.
Okay, so that's what I'm saying.
I really drew a movie. Yeah, I have a movie in X and time.
Yeah, okay. So the unfortunate thing, so that's a good, very good question. So what I'm saying is that if I look at my solution, and so I solve my system, I found my solution at time zero. There is no way to determine global minimizer. Just looking at solution at time zero, I would not be able to determine. If I have movie, then going up in time, it will be easier and easier for me to say in which domain it sits. So I would have shrinking domain, which determines where it can be. So what will happen is the following, that when I go to time, large time t, almost all points here will be excluded. Almost all points at time naught will be excluded. They will not be, they will be overswallowed by shock. So it will be, say, one shock here, which cover a lot of points. But complementary to this, so if you look in a circle, what you'll see that these points are all swallowed. Maybe something swallowed here as well. So there is only small interval where global minimizer can be. But we'll be able to determine it only with certain preciseness. And only in the limit when time goes to infinity, I would be able to determine it precisely. The unfortunate thing about this global minimizer is it depends not on the past of a process, but both on the past and the future. So it's very non-Markovian. And that's why it's difficult to work with it. So it's kind of concept which is nice to have mathematically, but to visualize it, it's rather difficult. So it's important for proofs, maybe, for picture, but to say where the point exactly sits is difficult. Okay? Yes?
Also, just for me to visualize the whole process that evolves in time, let's say if, so should we understand there's more and more shocks developing as I go on in time?
There is more than one.
More and more shots.
Okay.
Can you draw a
can we draw some time?
Yes, I will draw the movie. Yes, I will draw the movie.
More shots. Yeah. Each shots, each small shots, and slip more and more of your.
So, I mean, let me just, before I draw the movie, I will draw the movie, but just important thing, connection with dynamical system, important thing here. And this is an important remark. So, until now, we almost didn't use Lagrangian structure, that this is Lagrangian trajectories. Now, I want to remember that all the curves we are having here, all minimizers, are Lagrangian trajectories, but they're particular Lagrangian, not all Lagrangian trajectories are minimizers, only particular Lagrangian trajectories are minimizers. So I want to look at the phase space of Lagrangian flow. The phase space of Lagrangian flow. The phase space at time naught. The phase space of Lagrangian flow is position over velocity, right? To determine point, trajectory point, you have to determine position and velocity, right? So, we have a particular point which is point of global shock, and we have velocity of that point, it's particular velocity. So this point I determined by this thing, and V will be just a gradient of phi at that point. That is velocity. So both are concrete random thing. Now, Lagrangian trajectory. So time goes perpendicular to this blackboard, right? This is time. So Lagrangian trajectory goes through this point. And in fact, what I have explained implies, in dimension one you can prove it, in high dimension it's difficult to prove, but there is no question it's correct, that this Lagrangian trajectory is hyperbolic. Which means the following, that this is two d-dimensional phase space. D velocity is D position. So there are D stable directions and D unstable directions. It's Lagrangian flow, it preserves area. And this has, it also preserves volume. And it also symplectic. So number of positive Lyapunov exponents and negative is the same. Every positive comes with negative. So what I'm claiming is there are D positive Lyapunov exponents and D negative Lyapunov exponents. So and this is a picture in one-dimensional case. In one-dimensional case, it's two-dimensional plane. And what I'm saying that there is a curve which passes through this point, smooth curve, which is unstable manifold of that point. Unstable manifold means that when time goes to minus infinity, all points on this curve approach, if I start from any point on this curve, the trajectories will approach this trajectory. And this is one-dimensional curve or d-dimensional surface in d-dimensional space. Hyperbolicity implies that this is smooth. That this is smooth. Now, there is another curve which is stable manifold. I'm not interested in it. But there is another curve which consists of points which are approaching this trajectory when time goes to plus infinity. And that is consequence of hyperbolicity, very important. Right? And now, look at this picture and what you will see. So, for different x, you have different velocities, right? You can rather easily show that any one-sided minimizer, any two one-sided minimizers are asymptotic to each other when x goes to minus infinity. So this field of curves going down, which we described before, have the property that when time goes to minus infinity, they're getting closer and closer. You can easily imagine this because they want to be optimal, so they want to follow the same route. So they're getting closer and closer. Of course, they remember that they're on some distance because they started from different points. But when time evolves, they're getting closer and closer, exponentially fast. So what it means that all points here, if you take point and velocity, belongs to this unstable manifold of the global minimizer. Because global minimizer is just a particular point here. So since all trajectories are asymptotic to each other, they all have to belong to this curve. So there's a smooth curve, and this smooth curve gives me part of the graph. So here, what I can construct? I can construct graph velocity with respect of x just for minimizers. That will be something like going shock, will go like this. So what I'm claiming that this curve is just constructed from that one. It's part of this one. All pieces of this thing belongs here. Not every point here belongs to minimizers, but all minimizers belong to this curve. And now you understand what's going on. That if curve look like this, So how to construct this thing here? Well, it basically will be the following. You just follow, this will be minimizer, but then this piece will be better than that piece. So that is a shock. And so that was a minimizer.
Maxwell rule.
Huh? That's Maxwell rule. Then again you cut by Maxwell rule, and that's a minimizer. So that's from stable manifold you get this thing. But what is very important, that because stable manifold is smooth, you immediately get that this thing is smooth. And otherwise you don't know how regular is this graph. You don't have control of how smooth is function velocity over there. So you can immediately get that it will be smooth, piecewise smooth function with finite number of jump discontinuities. Yeah, it's a time zero. It's a snapshot. It's a time zero. So it's a snapshot of solution of this special solution. So this is a graph of special solution U omega x naught, which is the gradient of phi omega x naught. To get it, you just construct this and this you see. Now, before I draw the picture, it's important to mention here the following. That you see these shocks. However, there is one more shock present here, which you don't see. And that's the following shock. It's a point here and point there. Because this picture is drawing, it doesn't respect periodicity. This picture doesn't respect periodicity. But however, there are two points, y and y plus 1, which have the property that so this is a point where you also have jump discontinuity. So it's the same point in the circle, right? Y and y plus 1. But velocity here and here are different. And that is another point of shock, this point of y. You will see the shock on a circle, but you don't see it when you open it like this, right? So there are and there is slightly different nature of the shock. This is local shock and this is global shock, which is called topological shock. And now I would explain this nature of topological shock and a snapshot of the what's going on. Now I draw the picture. But have this in mind. Okay. So picture is a fault.
Now you will draw a picture of
the I would draw now the picture of what's going on with with all the things. Okay, so I again open my circle into the real line. I just unwrapped it. So I have infinitely many copies of my circle here. And then, say, 0, 1, 2, and so on. And so we remember that we have these global minimizers. And so this is a curve here. And there is exact copy of this curve, which is distance 1 apart from it, here. And another exact copy here, and so on. So everything is 1 apart, it's just periodic thing. Now, for every point, there are one-sided minimizers, which goes down. And they approach red curve. However, they have to choose which red curve they approach. Right? So, necessarily you have the following picture, that some points are going on this side and exponentially approach from here. But then some points approach here. And it should be some separation point which separates one from another. So there is some point there where you go here and here. And that's exactly a point of shock because it has two minimizers, one going on one side, another on another side. And that's exactly that point, this topological one. So it's governed only by topology, that you have to separate thing. You might have local shocks as well. Maybe this is a point of local shock. So there are two minimizers originating from this one, but they both approach the same red one. But there is only one point which separates convergence to different red ones. And the same picture here, so there is an exact copy of this. And so on. So that's a picture of minimizers, how they go. This is a global shock or topological shock. And when time evolves, this topological shock moves. It moves. It changes its position, but it's always one topological shock here which separates from other. Now, this is a picture on level of minimizers. Now, what will be the picture on the level of shocks? On the level of shocks, picture will be the following. Now I would draw this picture on a cylinder. I would not unwrap it on a whole plane. So this will be a movement of this global topological shock. Let me denote it. So that is a movement of shock. So at given time, that is a position of global shock. Now other shocks, local shocks of this nature, they appear at certain moments. So this is a point of appearance of a shock. It was no shock before, and then shock appeared at that point of time. Then it starts evolves and merge with the global one. Maybe another one emerge with this one. So it's a point field here of points where shocks are getting created. They create it, they move up and merge with a unique spine. This one spine, which is a global shock. And there is finite density of those shocks, finite density of creation of those, of these new shocks. This point is called pre-shock. It's not quite a shock, but next moment will be shock. And corresponds to the following picture on the, if we draw the velocity as a function on x. At that moment, at that point, you will see the following picture. Vertical tangent line, vertical derivative. The vertical tangent line. So that is how velocity would look like at that point, at that moment of time. So if you take larger time, then instead of this picture, you'll get already, and then you get a shock. But previous time, the picture would look like just big slope. But so this slope gets infinite negative slope, and then that's how shock gets
emerging points, but they merge.
No, that's not emerging. That's a creation of shock.
So yes, on this tree picture, green picture.
Yeah.
The merging points, and they merge the.
Yeah, the merging is it what we discussed already.
I see it on the U field.
So on the U field, you see it the following way. Well, not on the U field. You see it. On a level of minimizers, you see it the following way. The point of merge, you have three minimizers coming at the same point. That's a point of merge of two shocks. So point of shock is a point where there are two minimizers. Another point of shock is also two minimizers. When they merge, you get three minimizers at the same point. The next moment of time, only two. I mean, you don't see it because it happens at particular moments of time. Most of time they do not merge. So if you look at typical time, there is no not. It's special time.
No, I see a movie. Are you thinking?
Oh, you just see them.
You see big shock.
It's just jump. Yeah, it's jump. So what happens is the following. You had, so in the movie, you see, if you see velocity field, it had some jump thing. Like this, and then another jump like that, and then this piece gets smaller and smaller, and then you get something when you get some of these jumps together, and that's merging of the shocks. Yeah, they eat up this middle thing between them. And
why is the left shock moving faster than the right one?
Not necessarily. I mean, they might merge or not merge. Yeah, not necessarily.
No, shock moves with the velocity which is half sum.
It's half sum of the velocities from, yeah.
Oh, okay.
So it's half sum of these two.
So the message is that in the beginning of the movie, no shock waves, then in the middle of the movie, there are many, many shock waves. In the end of the movie...
No, not many. Finite number. It's finite number of shock waves. Every time you never see many. You see kind of 5, 7. There is some probability distribution.
They tend to disappear and create one big shock.
They merge with a big one. So you never will see situation that there are no shocks after some time. You always see at least one. You may see 2, 3, 5, but never less than one. And then there is statistics of the number of shocks, and that is a stationary process. Okay.
If we wait up to the end of the movie, how many shocks does it make?
It's statistics.
Statistics, so 5.
some.
They will see five tails, tail.
No, five, and then they merge, and there's three. I mean, statistics. It's ergodic
in
time, yes. It's stationary regime, and.
Your force creates shocks, then they eat each other, then it creates again. So we minimize them, which is alone. Shocks are just.
Yeah. But let me tell you what I want to explain one more thing. That this is a picture of topological shocks and shocks in one dimensional situation. And peculiar thing here is the following, that when you see snapshot of the solution on a torus, on a circle, you see that there are 5 points where you have discontinuity, right? What I'm telling you, that one of them is special, but when you look at it, you will never see which one is special. I mean, they're all identical 5 points, right? They're not different. No, but you can hear about multidimensional case. In multidimensional case, you can distinguish between global shock and local shocks, and that's what, let me explain it. It's very easy, and I can do it in 5 minutes. And then I say a few words about non-compact situations. It's better because it's finite moment. So, what I want to explain that in multidimensional case, picture more is more or less the same.
Just a short question, maybe you will tell me that it's irrelevant. I know that in not dissipative situations, there are also shocks, but they resolve differently in KdV, for instance, right? But there, you have a very illustrative interpretation that the shocks occur as a moving evolution of some Riemann surfaces, which has many punch cycles, and then these cycles suddenly open up. And or disappear, so you can think about it as a changing, particular evolution of Riemann surfaces in non-dissipative phase. Can this sequence of shocks be interpreted from the similar way from a point of view?
Well,
it's relevant, then we can skip it.
Well, the surface is a surface which we constructed. It's a surface of, so the surface here is a unstable manifold of the global minimizer. So unstable manifold is a surface in 2D dimensional space, and the graph of the velocity which you have is just a subgraph of this unstable minimizer. So you have a surface passing through a point, smooth surface, and there is a smooth function living on this surface. And what you construct now is minimums of this smooth function living in this way for a particular point. So you kind of take point, take a vertical line from the point, take all intersection of your surface with this vertical line, and then at every point there is a value of your smooth function, and you choose the minimum of it. So it's kind of singularities which appears when you take minimum of smooth function on a smooth surface, which complicates, which can have folds and other things. That's how I see it. But let me just explain the following picture.
I just have a simple question to make sure I'm with you. So this picture of the shocks arising and emerging again, that only is happening when new zero?
It is new zero, yeah. When new is non-zero, when new is positive, you will not see shock. It will be smooth thing. I mean, it might have a large derivative, but it will be smooth.
Okay, so the picture sort of continues, but things are smoothened out.
Yeah.
It's the same picture.
Yeah, well, yeah.
You can identify the local hilltops of the values of the
phase. Yeah. Yeah, because you see the picture up to the certain scale somehow.
Right. Okay, I'm sure.
But then you have the scale, so you put a random walker on there, okay, which always walks up or down.
Yes.
And then you find that the random walker will always end up at the height. Similar to this merging picture.
Mm-hmm. So it's counterpart of the merger.
Yeah, the dual of it. Yeah.
So I want to explain the following picture. So it's kind of interesting that just topology will govern the structure of shocks in multidimensional situation, and it will be more interesting. So imagine we have two-dimensional situation instead of one-dimensional. So instead of this picture, we have two-dimensional picture.
Sorry, what about one dimension? But do we know statistics on these shocks?
I mean, it is. What means statistics? A number of shocks. So statistical, yeah, I mean, we can say...
Appearance of the shock. Suppose I give you statistics of your force. Can you recompute statistics?
No, of course not. It's just something of the order of constant, because it's, I said, it's a density of the order of constant. The question which is universal, you have chance of answering only questions about universal behavior. So what is probably universal is the tails of the probability distribution, for example, for number of shocks. So what is the probability to have two shocks? You will never be able to calculate. But probability to have huge number of shocks, yes, how the case you can do, although we didn't do it. So it's probably very few things about statistics of force will govern the statistics of a large number of shocks. So that's, I think it's universal. That's why you have chance of answering this question, although we didn't study it.
So there is a chance of answering, but there is no answer.
Yeah, we didn't look at how the tail decays. We look at certain things. So what we were interested after Polyakov is the probability distribution for the large negative slopes of the velocity field. And what is a PDF for the derivative of the velocity field? For the shoulders, for the sharp shoulders, what is the probability that this derivative take large negative value? And how it decays? And that's what we looked at, and we were able to calculate it and get exponent for that. But I'm not discussing it. It's just concrete calculation in a sense. So it turns out, well, I mean,
can you put place Polyakov paper on this picture?
Yeah, sure. Okay, so Polyakov paper was, Polyakov wrote a paper in 96 or 95, where he looked at the problem of finding statistics for the large negative tails for the, for du over dx. So you consider du over dx in one-dimensional situation is differentiable almost everywhere, except it's a smooth function. And then, so this is a random variable, right? So it's a concrete question I'm asking. It's psi. This is a random variable. It's not defined in all points, but it's defined in almost all points. So it's a random variable, concrete random variable. And he was asking, what is the PDF for this random variable? It's just one-dimensional probability distribution. And it is well known, it's rather easy to say, that it's asymmetric. You know, because shocks are always going down, so it's asymmetric. And the following, that it has very sharp decay when xi is positive. It's highly improbable to have large positive slope of this thing. And it became like e to the minus xi cube. And it has algebraic tail here, 1 over xi in some power alpha.
This is independent of, this is universal, independent of...
So that was the main point of Polyakov's paper, that he was able to calculate this alpha, and he claimed that alpha is equal to 7 over 2.
Oh,
5. Yes, 5 over 2.
And this is independent of which forcing?
It's universal. What is essential is that forcing is large-scale forcing.
Is what essential?
Large-scale forcing. I mean, that's smooth, yeah. So that's what was Polyakov's prediction. That we were, now, Polyakov, of course, didn't use any dynamical language and any dynamical picture. He was just calculating correlation functions, and then you have to have this some closure, because... you have to close it somehow. He had some closure which was governed by his field theoretical intuition. And governed on that, he got this 7 over 2, 5 over 2 prediction.
And in fact,
it is incorrect. And from dynamical picture, it's rather easy to understand that large negative tails will be governed by this kind of points. In vicinity of these points where you have minus infinity, they give dominant contribution to large negative tails of the derivative. And you can easily calculate what will be the influence, just integrating, just see the area of the points where the slope. So you look on this picture, and picture just before that, when it was still big, but not infinite. Then you calculate number, area of points where you have slope of the size you want. And this will be correct answer. And this will be incorrect answer. And it will be 1 over xi to the power 7 over 2. So the answer will be this one. And that now is confirmed numerically and the other things. So there is no doubt that this is correct answer.
Do we understand what test?
Yeah, it was an outbreak.
Do we understand what breaks down in the Poliakov argument? What it is that doesn't work?
If you ask me personally, I don't. Okay. But some people claim they do understand.
In the case, because the equation you have for the quotient function never closed, so we close the equation by making some assumption which corresponds to some of the Poliakov function.
Okay, it's
enclosure. It's closure, of course. The error is enclosure, but why his intuition was wrong, I don't know.
The integrator product expansion was incorrect, but is there any correct one?
I don't know. I don't think somebody has reproduced 7 over 2 by this technique. Okay? Okay. So let me just draw one more picture, and then I will explain this. So you see, we have this lattice of red curves, and then we necessarily have one point which separates domains of convergence to one curve to another curve, right? Now, in two-dimensional case, we will have two-dimensional lattice of red curves because we unwrap torus into the plane. So this is a two-dimensional lattice. A curve's going kind of vertical. So this is these points. Instead of this one-dimensional lattice of points, I get two-dimensional lattice of points on a plane, right? And then again, all points on this plane converge, trajectories of them converge to one of the red trajectory, because they're all asymptotic to one of them. But again, they have to decide to which one. So what we'll see, that there are certain countries, domains, of points which converge to this one, and then it will be domain of points which converge to that one, to this one, to this one, and all this will split the plane. It will be a complete split of a plane or the domains of points which converge to different points. Right? And this split, those things are exact copies of each other. It's just one, it's just ZD acting on that thing. So,
and there are regions between those circles?
There is nothing in between. So everything is covered by the thing. It's just tiling.
Okay.
And then if you look at it, you understand that the boundary between two domains consists of points where you have two minimizers, one going here and one going there. And those, of course, are lines of shocks. And triple points correspond to a situation where you have three minimizers coming here, here, and here. And since this tiling is random, you understand that at time, so this is at time zero, so at given snapshot, you will never see quattro points. You will never see four countries meeting in one thing, because it's the degenerate situation to have four minimizers at one point, meeting at one point in two-dimensional situation. So what you will see tiling of a plane on domains, identical copies of domains. And this tiling, the boundary of this tiling is a shock, is formed by shock lines. And then you can think a little bit of this, and then you can say that you can easily understand that these domains are hexagonal. They're necessarily a hexagon, curvilinear hexagon. So it means that each domain has six neighbors. And that's very easy to understand why. It follows again from topology, from earlier, basically from earlier theorem. You cannot have anything. The fact that you don't have, that you have only triple points govern the fact that it's only hexagons, right? So you have this curvilinear hexagon, which is a topological shock, which separate domain from each other. Now, if you go back to your torus, two-dimensional torus, then this hexagonal thing, which has six vertices on it, in fact, will have only two points, because others are copies of this under translations. So what you will see that there are two points, one and another, and these two points are connected by three lines on the torus. So you have one line connecting them, like this, another line connecting them like that, and another line connecting them like this. In fact, lines can be more complicated. Maybe they have several rotations along the torus before they went up, but that's what you'll see. And that is a topological shock which necessarily present when you do, say, calculations, you necessarily will see this kind of structure. This structure always will be present. And that is topological shock. You might have another line of shocks here and here, local shocks of not topological nature. They evolve in time and merge with the global one, with the topological one, and appear again merge. But that's the picture you see. So in this situation, you can distinguish between local shocks and global shocks. Global shocks is a global thing on the torus, which is formed by connected lines. They start to merge at one point and then swallow the whole thing. So they just come and one point merge and then they come to the whole thing.
So do I understand right? The picture is basically similar to 1D in the sense that there's local shocks always emerging and eventually...
Yeah, so there is... So what I'm saying is that boundary condition governs certain structure of shocks which should be there, present. And then other shocks can be or not, cannot be, but this necessarily is present. And that's just follow from topology. If you consider other manifolds and torus, then there will be another structure. Now, this is so rigid only in two-dimensional case when you have hexagon. In three-dimensional case, you can have different surfaces. But the smallest of them would have, the smallest structure for the global shock in three-dimensional case is a huge thing which has so it's a surface which looks the following way. You have to take cube, and then you cut off pieces here. So you cut off these things on the torus, on the cube, and you do the same with these three edges. You also cut something from there. And that will be the smallest object you can get in three-dimensional case. But there are others as well.
Any relation to logical structure in the universe?
Not as far as I know. Well, thanks to large-scale structure, we exist. We can discuss these things. I don't know.
But let me ask you a less global question. So if we look at 2D turbulence of some sort, or something that's supposed to realize this equation, do we see the structure of shocks as in experiment?
Well, I mean, you have to run this experiment on a torus.
Right.
And when we did run it in a torus, and we had to, we saw it numerically, of course.
You did numerical experiment.
Yeah, of course.
But real acoustics is built only in one dimension. In two dimensions, real acoustics is a second order equation in time. It's not first order equation in time. It's only in one dimension. You go with the reference frame, moving the sound velocity, and then you have built it. In two dimensions, it's not this. Acoustics is different.
You mean this equation you cannot realize in...
Well, you can realize its surface growth, etc., but definitely not in
fluid
acoustics. Yes. Only in 1D.
Why do you say acoustics? I don't see.
Acoustics are incompressible flow.
Oh, okay.
You create shock. Right. I mean, not right. like you get used to it.
Right.
Yes. What do you mean? Local shocks? Well, you can have situation where there are no local shocks at all. I mean, they're kind of just certain lines, certain curves. Yeah, they can electricity, they approach it. Yeah.
Well, it's a new equal zero, isn't it?
It's all a new equal to zero, yes.
Because if you not zero, which is the most important experiment, then you have using stationary state that is Gaussian and correlated.
Well, when U is small, then you'll see some reminiscence of the thing, I mean.
So if I take a Gaussian measure that I don't put, I get to the taking state and I start looking at hilltops and structurizing them, the sharpness of the hilltop will be the chill.
Yeah.
I pull then this thing out.
Well, I guess so, because we can prove that probability distribution, stationary probability distribution for positive nu converges to that one. So yes, you see something like this.
Yeah.
It's not so much, I mean, what I'm discussing, white noise is not so much essential here.
Sensation is
okay, anyway, so just since there's almost no time left, I would say a few things about just multidimensional, non-periodic case. So in non-periodic case, you want to drop condition of this being periodic, of this guy's being periodic. So they're of the order of constant, but not periodic. And that kind of natural model maybe will be what people normally consider, when those things are also random in X, some realization of some stationary process in X, and then they're multiplied by white noises here. Now, I want to say that this model is slightly different. So why I'm doing this? Because I still want to keep this smoothness structure in X. I want to have large scale forcing in X. And when you think about this, then this is not exactly the model when people consider, so there's a substantial difference between this model and normal models of directed polymer people consider. So it's a study will reduce to analysis of directed polymers or random walks and random potential, right? I mean, if we do Hopf-Cole, then we write Feynman-Katz formula, then solution can be expressed through statistics of directed polymers, of random walks and the random potential given by here. However, what people know, so let's think that we're living in a lattice. Let's forget that we're on a, so suppose X is in the lattice and T is in the lattice, right? So that's what people considered for years. Problem of directed polymers where FXT is just IID. IID, independent identity distribution for different X on a lattice and for different T. And the letter Z1. However, the model which kind of I would like to consider, and I think it makes perfect sense, is a model when this fxt is a product of vx times bt, where both are independent for different x, and this is independent for different t. But there is a product structure, so you are not independent altogether. So you have not n square independent parameters in this piece of lattice of the size n square. But you have order of n random parameters. And that is a model which kind of follow from, if you want to generalize this thing. And we looked at this model of directed polymers on this random potential. So B on T is plus minus 1 with probability 1. It's white noise. And this is independent of different x. And we looked at the problem of what will be action minimizing, what is the property of action minimizing pass, what will be statistics of action minimizing, not even pass, but minimal action, what will replace KPZ scaling in this situation. And we can actually say a lot about what will be the KPZ scaling in this situation, what was the difference between KPZ, which is characterized scaling here, and KPZ type scaling is here. So in this case, we can study, we can prove that these things are universal in certain sense, and there are limiting distributions, and so there is a counterpart of the standard theory in this situation, but I don't know any connection with random matrices here.
Maybe you can comment about this Schwann story, this discrete growth, which they think somehow hand-wavingly related to.
Well, it is related. It is not related. It is related to Burgers. It's the same equation. It's KPZ equation. The question is what you assume about the potential. So what they look at the very same problem where potential is IID for different X and T. And this in this situation, you cannot hope to keep large scale structure in a sense. I mean, this is on the lattice, you don't see the question of what's going on the small scales. But if you go to continuous X, what you will see that your Lagrangian curve trajectory starting from different point will deviate immediately, so you will not have smoothness in this model. So I, for me, I insist on this model, and I think it makes perfect sense physically, because...
So you're saying that the random matrix approach to Whitwell seems to be is not relevant?
Or no, I'm not saying that.
What is
it? I'm saying the following, that there are two different models. On the lattice, I don't know which one is preferable. I mean, it depends on what kind of physical problem you study. For example, when I look at the problem of directed polymers in this model, I think about this the following way, that I have disordered space in position space, and then I take it and put it in fluctuating field, but which fluctuates the same way at one point and another point. So it's one fluctuating field, which is governed by this, fluctuating in time. And I put it in disordered situation in X. This model means that you have disordered situation in X, and they completely randomly fluctuate in different points. So the fluctuation of the field we put it in time is different here and here. And I think it's coherent fluctuation of the field in time in different points. So that's the difference between two models. Both make sense. I think this problem is extraordinarily beautiful. I mean, it's a very general problem of the following type. You have disordered two-dimensional media, and you want to go from one point to the faraway point and to get minimum action. And you're asking how your pass will fluctuate and what will be fluctuation of your optimal action. It's an extraordinarily beautiful problem. There is no doubt it's connected with random matrices. GUE is not essential here, as you know. I mean, there are results of Soshnikov showing that Tracy Widom is valid for any ensemble of big matrices. If they're Hermitian, you know that, right? There's a full universality which is proven now. So nobody was able to prove universal results for this model. This extraordinarily beautiful probabilistic problem, open. I don't know, I don't have much to say about it.
Thinking about Tracy Widom, where is this picture? So connect to this two different approaches. I don't think that there is a connection, because in one case you have what Kostya presumes, that shocks are dilute. They eat each other from time to time, but basically it's a dilute shock.
Exactly. That is a smoothness in X.
Smoothness of forcing. As long as the force is in this white noise...
Then you have you create shocks all the time on all scales. That's a very complicated structure, because you create... That's exactly what I'm saying. If your fluctuation of your field in time is independent at different points, then two nearby points will immediately behave very differently, because they're just in a different fluctuating time. So no smoothness, so you'll be creating shocks all the time, everywhere. So you'll have constant kind of flux of creating of shocks. And it will be a completely different picture in terms of shocks, just completely different. No part of the hyperbolic theory will be there. It will be no smoothness, no nothing. I mean, it will be a statistical problem.
will not be there.
Absolutely. It is important for Polyakov as well, assumption that force is large scale. And the moment you go to KPZ with delta correlation in X, you lose it immediately.
Cubic tail
is very, very, very general. I mean, it's very rough, very robust. Say it again? Yes. Yeah. But what I'm saying is that in this model, you're not getting Tracy Widom. It has different scalings. And it just have different scaling behavior. So it's a very precise defined model. It's exactly directed polymer problem, but you think that potential, it has the following thing. It is a product of random potential depending on X times, so B omega t plus minus 1 is probability 1/2, independent for different t. And this I assume to be IID with compact support. For example, say uniformly distributed on minus 1, 1, for example, independent for different x. Or say some probability distribution, but on a finite interval. And then again, you want to study the question going from points at the origin to find a path of length n which has optimal action, or you can consider polymer with positive temperature. And for optimal action, I can show that An behave like constant time m plus terms of the order of 2/3. The fluctuation will be not 1/3, but 2/3. And if I subtract average term and divide by n to the 2/3, it converges to a limit distribution, which is universal, which doesn't depend on the probability distribution here. It converges to some limit distribution, which actually also behave like e to the decay like e to the minus x cube in a large x. It's kind of very robust. What? And secondly, that but fluctuation of the path itself will be n to the 2/3, like in KPZ case. So this transversal will be n to the 2/3, but fluctuations of the action will be not 1/3, but 2/3. This we can prove and we can study. But I don't know anything about. It will be interesting to find some matrix ensembles for which similar behavior happens, but I don't know it. Say it again. So that's exactly the assumption. Those are independent. Those are independent, but the product of them can, of course, it's dependent. Well, I mean, if you take product,
it's so L independent. Mm-hmm.
You do more run.
If you take 4 points, if you take 4 points on a plane and take product of f in these 4 points, you always get positive number. Yeah. So it's a different model. It's it has different statistics and it's different. That's a different story.
Okay, thank you very much.